Welcome to the Group Home Riches Podcast. If you have the desire to be your own boss, create your own schedule, and become financially free while at the same time helping people in need, then you've come to the right place. At GroupHomeRiches.com, we teach people exactly like yourself how to get started in the group home business. And on this podcast, you're going to hear their stories firsthand.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Group Home Riches Podcast. Today's guest, I am excited to speak with. It's been just about 2 years since the last time we spoke. He just recently emailed about a question, you know, asked them how things have been going, and things have been going really well, actually. So I am very excited to catch up. Terrence, welcome.
Thank you, Brandon. Yeah, finally catch up with you. Been 2 years, man. Time is flying.
Time's been flying. I think we both thought it was about a year, but it's actually been two. So yeah, before we get into kind of what's been going on since then and kind of, you know, how you got started and everything like that, why don't you first give people kind of an introduction, you know, where you're from, professional background, and then briefly what made you like look into this kind of stuff? What drew you to this type of industry in the first place?
Yeah, definitely. So originally from Fresno, California, currently living in Tampa, Florida. So I moved all the way across the country and kind of got into this similar stories to most people. I have a passion for real estate. I want to be extremely wealthy one day. And I feel like that's a great avenue to get there. But the reason I fell in love with this model and kind of sought out what you guys were doing is I ended up re-giving my life to Christ. And in that moment, like, this was an opportunity for me to give back to people, pour into people, and also pursue my passion of real estate. So that's what we're doing on a daily basis. And I love it.
Awesome. And before you kind of caught the real estate bug, you were working, you were doing something like community orientated. Remind me of what you were doing before that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sorry, I didn't touch on that. So I was in my background's in exercise science, like strength and conditioning. So I was a strength and conditioning coach, and then I'm also in software sales.
Okay, very cool. And the strength and conditioning, was it at a school or something like that, wasn't it?
Yep, at a high school.
Perfect. Yeah, so that kind of like satisfies your need to help people. Probably had like the, you know, realized through doing all that stuff, like, man, I need to get some passive income or, you know, become financially free or something like that. Started looking into real estate. Was this the first kind of real estate niche that you were looking into, or did you go down another path at first?
This was the first one that I actually got into. I looked into wholesaling around the pandemic time, but the courthouses were locked up. Foreclosures weren't happening, so people weren't interested in selling their properties or making any deals, anything like that. You know, we were worried about the pandemic, so that didn't work out, and then didn't touch real estate or have an idea for it until I came across this opportunity.
Nice. Did you start marketing to find like wholesale deals, or were you just kind of in the educational phase?
Actually, I reached out to someone in Tampa. I found them on Instagram. And he was wholesaling in the area. He's actually the one who pointed me in your guys' direction, but we'll get into that later. Awesome. But he had been wholesaling for a while in New York, moved down to Florida, and he was able to pull leads and had deals. So I was actually driving for dollars. So I was getting real familiar with the Tampa area, going to properties. I would walk in the backyard, try to sneak around. I was nervous, of course. I had never done it before. And take pictures of it. And then he would help me kind of underwrite it and figure out what would be willing to offer on it.
Nice. Did you get to the point where you were negotiating with sellers?
I did not get to that point. I was close, but like I said, no one was really interested in making a deal. They were kind of comfortable or wanted to wait things out. So it just wasn't the right timing, but I am looking to kind of get back started into that. And just obviously instead of wholesale, trying to find the off market deals and keep them and turn them into unlicensed group homes.
Beautiful. You know, the majority of our content isn't focused on the real estate stuff, but eventually once people get like their first home or two rocking and rolling, you know, in order to scale, you eventually just kind of fall into being a real estate investor. And I think at this point in your career, you kind of have to need to learn this stuff because you do want to grow, right? So
absolutely.
We will touch on that stuff a little bit, maybe like some general information, and then we'll I'll kind of show you a little bit more about kind of how we run our operation after the interview portion. So, and just for other folks listening out there, if you're like debating what to do, there's all, you know, you could do rental properties, you could do wholesale, you could do fix and flip. I think that a lot of people out there, and this is just kind of a general marketing idea, I think you just don't understand how big you need to go, especially in competitive stuff like that. So just roughly, how many properties do you think that you found driving for dollars that you actually marketed to? A couple hundred?
It's endless. And you know, it's funny, I still have, I guess I could call it the eye. So I don't know how to wholesale yet. I've never wholesaled a deal, but literally I'm driving down the road and I'll go to a different city or a different area. And I'm like, oh, that grass looks a little high, or ooh, that roof could use some work.
I'll whip an illegal U-turn.
Yeah. Yep. Go try to get the address and see what's going on with that. Oh, yeah. So
I'll crumb through that grass and find the address. I don't care. But yep. Even if you did like a couple hundred, which that takes a long time to be able to drive a city and find like a couple hundred vacant houses. Yep. That's really only driving for dollars is one method, but it's very slow. And to put things in perspective, we're making like 400 to 500 phone calls per night.
Wow.
And we have a whole bunch of criteria, not just vacant houses, not just our driving for dollars, but there's a whole bunch of lists that you could purchase. So, you know, in order to find like a wholesale deal or something to fix and flip, you're competing with, and this is a relatively small organization. You know, we're only doing like, you know, we get like one or two deals per month, which is not bad, right? But again, we're making 400 or 500 calls per night. There's no way that even if you had 1,000 properties.
Yep. There's no way someone like me that's driving for dollars can compete.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's kind of show the, I guess, the opportunity with the group homes and the shared living and, you know, this model that we teach. Have you ever heard me say like that? I'll do it for you. You know, you see all the We Buy Houses cast signs.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of them. Right. Yep. So you're competing and you know who's putting those up.
Who? Wholesalers.
Wholesalers. Right. So you're competing with everybody like that, as well as the big dogs that maybe like if they're doing billboards, those are like large chains like Homevestors. You know, competed with like Robert Kiyosaki and like national chains, yep. As well as all the people that just learned about real estate and are throwing up those homemade bandit signs. Right.
Yeah.
And like I said, the small people, you know, we're sending out thousands of letters, making thousands of phone calls per month. You're competing with people like that as well. On the flip side, and also, you know, who we're looking to get is a motivated seller, which in actual practice, how many sellers want to sell their property for pennies on the dollar so you can make a ton of money?
Zero.
It's not zero, but it's a needle in a haystack, and it's a big haystack, right? That's why you have to go so big, right? On the flip side, how much advertising do you see for the type of housing that you provide?
I don't see any. We're far in the few. We've gone out when we were first getting started. Sorry if I'm jumping ahead, you know, took advice from you, actually signed up for the coaching program, which was awesome, on top of, you know, being a part of the Facebook group. But in the coaching program, one of the first things was market first. It was nerve-wracking to do it, but literally had to pick up the phone, called on nonprofits, put signs. My girlfriend and I, we went and put signs on bus stops. And before that, we had hundreds of people looking for a place. The nonprofits were extremely happy to hear about what we were doing. They were ecstatic. And to this day, you know, our phone rings nonstop of people looking, and now it's just word of mouth.
So you painted the picture perfectly, which was exactly what I was trying to portray. So there's a ton of demand for this type of housing, which you saw by gauging the reaction, you know, compare the marketing that you were doing for this stuff compared to the wholesaling and the reaction, right? Yeah. And then, and let you can see it in practice when you go outside, you could probably get the feedback from the organizations. There's not a lot of people that are providing this type of housing. So it's a good problem to have in business. So just for the folks out there, you know, considering, you know, the opportunities, you know, keep that in mind.
Definitely. And people, sorry to cut you off, people truly need the help. This is a great way for the people who care about real estate to, you know, set themselves up individually for success. But you're also changing the lives of so many people. You know, we have people who move into our locations and we think that, oh, someone wouldn't want to move there. Someone wouldn't want to share a room. But there's people in cities by themselves and they come here and now they have a small family. You know, they have people they get to talk with every day, be a part of something. Some of our residents, they reach out and they're like, hey, do you need any help marketing or can I do anything to help? Like, I love what we're doing here. I want to help promote it. I want to be a part of it. So you really have the opportunity to change people's lives by doing something like this.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. And that's where the social skills come on, just being able to kind of read people and see who will get along with who. But you do want each home to kind of operate as like a mini family. So that's beautiful that you've picked that up already. Let's kind of rewind a little bit back to the beginning. So you kind of touched on it. What were those first couple calls like? You know, even when you didn't get over it, even when you were nervous, what were the first couple of phone calls like?
They went way better than I thought they would. I mentioned I'm in software sales. So if I call someone and leave a voicemail, oftentimes I don't get a call back. When I left a voicemail to nonprofit, I was actually getting a phone call back expressing how interested they were to learn more about what we are offering, our pricing, what we could do for their residents. And a lot of them had people ready to go. And I didn't have a property yet, but they were like, oh, okay, can we come and check it out and visit? We have people who are looking to move in. And so, you know, I was like, okay, we're planning to open up at the end of the month. And I kind of forced myself into, all right, we're going to have a property by this time at the end of the month. And that's what I started promoting. So by the time our first property opened up, we had a list of people ready to go.
Love it. Now, do you see kind of why we gave you the tough love and made you start making those phone calls to begin with?
Absolutely. And it was worth it.
And it was a while ago, it was 2 years ago. But if you can think back, you know, would you have actually worked with a landlord or put your money down for a lease? Would you have actually gotten a property and actually gotten started if you had not made those calls to begin with?
No, I wouldn't have been as confident going to landlords. And, you know, because you were my direct coach, got to experience firsthand with me. I had some landlords who I was almost negotiating with on if they wanted to allow me to use their properties or not. We ended up deciding not to work with them. But it was, you know, I had to be confident in what I was portraying to them because they were asking difficult questions like, how are you going to do this? Is this legal? You know, do you have people ready to move in? And if I didn't have that confidence from the phone calls I already had made and people ready to move in, I wouldn't have been able to negotiate with those individuals and eventually move into the place that we did to open up our first home.
Yeah. So the first step, you know, a lot of people reach out to us, hey, I don't have a home and, you know, not really sure if this is legal, blah, blah, blah. Like, how do I get started? Absolute first step. Just to kind of wrap your head around the basics, which, you know, there's only a couple like main questions, which if you read just the free material we put out, you can usually get it. We have a bunch of videos inside the Gold course that really goes into the details, or you can just ask us, right? So, or you do, you know, book the coaching and we'll take care of that on the first call. Then it's the marketing and stuff like that. And then once you kind of get the referrals lined up, then it's time to start looking for the properties. And what we did for Terrence, and this is, I love this story. So Terrence had a group of investors. So it wasn't just like one investor, it was a family, right?
Yep.
And most, you probably know this from sales, you can get objections and questions. They're usually that you handle them the same, An objection is a little tougher though, because instead of like somebody saying like, oh, hey, is this legal or not? Like an objection is like, no, you can't do that in this area. It's illegal.
So, right.
They had all the common like questions and concerns, but they were mostly framed as objections. Yep. So, you know, part of his coaching program was I hopped on there and pitched these guys for him. If you remember back to that call, what did you think about that call and kind of, you know, the questions that they had and then just kind of the outcome of that once we kind of like walked them through everything?
Yeah. And it was objections, and it was, I don't think it was objections in me or in you when they spoke to you. It was objections in this seems too good to be true.
Yep.
Right. Because I mean, I listen to all your guys' podcasts and you always talk about how, you know, this information was put on Bigger Podcasts or Bigger Pockets or any of the other real estate podcasts. You know, people would get laughed out the room because the numbers just don't make sense of what we're able to do on the real estate side of things. So when I pitched it to them, I think it was obviously took your advice. I offered above market rent. I told them I'd take care of all the maintenance. And they're like, man, there's no way. What's wrong? Something has to be missing. So that, I think that's where the objections come from. But it really is what we offer to these landlords. We really are able to do all the properties that we operate under right now. We rent, and all of our landlords love us. I had to turn down a property the other day, actually, because, you know, we want to move into the purchasing side, which is why we'll get back in the wholesaling. But if you run a tight ship and really care about the individual, they're going to take care of the properties for you. So you won't even have to worry about maintenance as much as you think.
Yeah. What are, for the people new to the content, and maybe they have the same kind of reservations that those original investors we spoke with have, you know, what are the advantages? Why would someone want to work with you instead of just, you know, renting it out to like a, you know, young professional or single family or something like that?
Yeah, definitely. Biggest one was a big eviction process. If landlord rents it out to, you know, regular individual, obviously they're running, you know, credit card check and making sure that they can afford it, checking 3 months pay stubs. But if they wanted to ask that individual to leave because they were damaging the property or anything like that, they would have to go through a 30-day eviction process. We don't have to do that because of the way we have it set up. There's also the issue you run into of, you know, giving a 24-hour notice to even come and see the property, make sure that everything's okay. You know, we have the opportunity to show up when we need to check out the property. We also have security cameras in place, you know, in the common areas, outdoor, in the front yard, the backyard. And then on top of that, we also have our house supervisor at each location who's like the eyes and ears of the house of what's going on. What are the residents thinking? How's the peace of the house going? So there's tons of advantages to setting it up this way that you just honestly can't do if you rent it out to, you know, a regular individual.
Yeah. And you touched on it earlier, but the one thing that's going to pique most investors, highlight investor, going to pique their interest would be
the increase in rent.
Bingo.
Because of the way we're operating, and, you know, we could do the shared rooms and the population we serve. When I pitch landlords, my first conversation with them is before I've been sharing what I want to do, I tell them how much money I want to pay them. So whatever they're offering on or have the property listed at, I usually go above that.
Yeah. So above market rent is a good kind of phrase to use if you guys are out there talking with landlords.
Yep.
Do you still, and remind me, how many properties do you have?
We're at 5 locations now.
Awesome.
5 locations, 37 residents.
Unbelievable. I know on that first property you offered above market rent. Are you still doing that for all of the properties?
No, this last one I did not have. The other 4 I did, and just because it made sense, and Tampa is a hot market, so there's other people interested in it. So just I could make sure to secure the property, I did that. But like I said, moving forward, don't have to do that anymore. There's a demand for it, and we just had the opportunity of another property and we turned it down because we want to move into the buying phase.
Yeah, at this point, you are higher than average income earner, I'm guessing. You have a track record. I'm sure you have good credit. You have a history of, you know, showing that you're not going to duck out on these places. They probably just want to work with somebody that's going to be there long term. Are you still covering like the basic maintenance stuff as well?
Yeah, still covering any damages that, you know, our tenants cause or anything like that, we'll make sure to cover. But anything major, we do not cover. And the other thing that helps now when, you know, speaking with landlords, with the first property, I didn't have anything to show. Now, when I'm speaking with a landlord, if they're like, oh, how does this work? Or is the property going to be damaged? You know, I'm just like, hey, let's take a ride. And we just drive to one of the locations that's already up and running. They could see how it's ran. And then that makes them a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, it's all about getting your confidence. Your confidence is going to come from like actual achievements, right? You can't, it's tough to fake confidence. But bare minimum, when you're first starting out, what will give you the confidence? And again, why we make you guys do it is, you know, if you at least have like a couple of nonprofits, that's going to alleviate the worry of these landlords. Like, okay, yeah, the property can make this much, but, you know, show me, who are you working with? Where are your tenants coming from? And then if you can say, hey, look, I mean, I just got 5 calls today, or, you know, sometimes you can even get a contract ahead of time or people on your wait list. That's one of those things that's going to give you the confidence. What I love about kind of us working together and then that story with the original investors. So we did the first pitch together. What happened with those guys?
They were still, like you said, they had their objections. And they eventually were, I think it was 3 properties that they had, and they agreed to allow me to use the first one, but I just didn't feel comfortable with it. After all the objections they shared and how many questions they had, I didn't, and it was going to be my first property. I didn't need someone doubting in me going into it and breathing down my neck as I was still trying to figure things out. So decided not to move forward with them. You know, we parted on good terms. So that's how that ended. And, you know, the following, we ended up finding our first location that we did end up moving to, and the people were willing to work with us and actually happy that we were doing that. So it worked out.
Yeah. So let me rewind and kind of rephrase that a little. Terrence, after he got through the first pitch, kind of saw how it was done. And kind of, it was a tough pitch. The people still wanted to work with them, but Terrence turned them down. Okay. Yeah. And then within a week, he went and found someone that was going to be a lot easier to work with. So once you kind of shift your mindset a little bit, you kind of realize the advantages of the business model. You kind of do have your ducks in the row. You understand the stuff and, you know, you have like a wait list or at least the connections like Terrence did. It's kind of like you guys are the prize. It gives you the leverage. And I think once that clicked for him, it only took him a couple of days to go and get it on his own, which I absolutely love to see. So big lesson for folks, you know, that are kind of struggling with this stuff and asking, you know, we get emails all the time or messages in the Facebook group. Hey, can't find a landlord that wants to work with me. How many people do you have on your wait list? Oh, you haven't been doing any marketing. Right. You guys kind of have to build yourselves up to make it, you know, make sense for the other person on the other end. So that was a really, really cool thing to see. So that was about 2 years ago. You got the first property. But talk about that first property, you know, getting it set up. What demographics does it cater to? If it is like one particular demographic, tell us about that first property. Any challenges you faced with that? Let's hear about that first property you got rocking and rolling after you found an investor to work with.
Yeah. So none of our locations house a specific demographic. We have 3 men's locations and 3 women's locations, but we're open to anybody. So we house people who have mental health conditions, people who used to have a drug or alcohol addiction, someone who just got out of divorce, someone who is transitioning out of prison. There's tons of nonprofits in the area who have an area of focus that they work on. So we opened ourselves up for general public. And you know, we do not discriminate on individuals who move in. So we don't have a specific demographic. With that first property, there was, just like starting anything, tons of things come up when starting, but it was easy to get the place filled. That wasn't an issue. But after that, it was kind of, I think I was in my own head of being comfortable with what was happening. You know, I wanted to show up every day. I wanted to be there 24/7 and make sure that just nothing was going wrong until, you know, I got the house supervisor in place and I was just more comfortable in seeing like, man, these guys, it was a guy's house that we opened up first. These guys are really happy here. And what fulfilled me with the first house, if I'm being honest, the house did good profit wise, but what really fulfilled me was the conversations that I had from it. I don't come from a social worker background, so I had never had conversations with these individuals who were sleeping in the woods, got kicked out from their family, have a mental health condition. Their backgrounds and what they've been able to overcome and come through in their life were touching to me, humbled me, made me appreciate them, had some teary conversations. And it was just so, so fulfilling to hear the thank yous and how grateful everyone was of what we were doing and the opportunity to just have a roof over their head. So that was the most fulfilling part. And that's what got me through the tough times of like a toilet breaking and something like that. You know, it was those conversations. And that's why I definitely want to continue to grow this thing.
Love it. And that's why we do it. You know, there's things like wholesaling, rental properties are just strictly about like the cash flow, right?
Yep.
But the real riches, and why Andy named it, you know, the group home riches, are the stories like that. If you haven't gotten them already, it's like, you know, imagine those people in that stage, and then they write you a letter or a text or something like that a year or two from now, and they've completely changed their lives around, and they just reach out to you to like, thank you.
That, yep.
You know, that's going to be super fulfilling for you. So, all right, that's awesome. So majority of the homes are general population, mostly men's houses. Do you have any women's homes?
Yeah, we have 3 men's houses and 2 women's homes. And I couldn't have expanded as quick as we did to 5. I got to give a shout out to my partner, Arthur. He's also in the Group Home Riches community. I got started before I did in the Tampa area. He had 2 locations, was working on building a third. I had 2 locations and I had a huge waiting list. And I was like, hey man, let's partner up and just really grow this thing and, you know, do good in the community. And we had stayed in touch over the year, first year that I got started. And that second year is when we decided to expand, partner up, and it's been awesome.
Nice. Why don't you break down like what the organization looks like and the roles? You know, you don't have to go into the exact details, but I'm just kind of curious if you structure anything differently than how Andy does it. So you kind of mentioned the house supervisor.
Yep.
I'm guessing you and Arthur are, you going to take on the operational management role?
Yep, exactly. So, you know, we took your guys' model. So actually my first resident in our first location, he was our very first house supervisor there. And now that we have 5 locations, he's actually got a promotion to housing coordinator. So we have a house supervisor at each location. And those house supervisors, the eyes and ears, they actually report to him. Something goes on, they text or call him, just added another filter. And then if something needs to get brought up, then it will come to me or Arthur. Arthur really handles the maintenance side of things, and I stick to the financials.
Beautiful. So on the 5 properties, what would you say your average like weekly time spent on the business is?
Is that a trick question?
No, I'm curious.
It depends on the week, but definitely under 5 hours, I would say, easily.
Couple hours on average, unless there's like a 911 you got to deal with.
Exactly. Yeah.
Beautiful. So yeah, you've kind of, so you took the housing supervisor and he's kind of performing he would be what Andy calls the operational manager. And is he over, yep. is he overseeing all five properties?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's not perfect yet. I mean, we still have our kinks that we need to work out, but the goal for it is for the house supervisors, you know, if they had an issue that they would usually text or call me about, they go to him first. What he can't handle, he'll filter up to me or Arthur. That way it saves time for everybody.
Yeah. Well, you're to the point now where your job is to work on the business. Right.
Yes, work
out those kinks, which we'll kind of get into here in a little bit. So, all right, that's awesome. So each house has its own house supervisor.
Correct.
And then you have the original house supervisor. He's been promoted to
housing coordinator,
which in our content, you'll hear us mention the operational manager. So that's mm-hmm. that role. Your business partner kind of oversees like managing the day-to-day activities and maintenance issues, like if it's escalated to him, and you just kind of handle like the business side of things, like accounting, probably finding the properties and things like that.
Yeah. And I still have close hand because I've built up the relationship with the nonprofit. So when we have vacancies and availability, that falls under me as well to, you know, make sure we're getting the right people back into the places, like you mentioned earlier, you know, will they get along with their roommate and, you know, stuff like that.
Cool. All the properties are unlicensed?
Yes.
Do you have any tenants that need any services? And if so, how do you handle that?
We have a few. Yeah, we do. And all of that is outsourced through, we have someone who gets services through home health. And then we have three individuals who get services from the nonprofit that actually referred them over to us. So they have, whether it be their case manager or a nurse, come into our property, give them the care that they need, and then they will leave. But we do not handle any of that.
Perfect. So we won't get it. You don't got to get into the details and the nitty gritty. That's covered in the gold course. But it was probably your first question, right? If not, you remember the investors, that was their question. And the people mm-hmm. that are, if this is their first podcast, they're wondering, what license and certificate do I need to get in order to do this in my city? So why don't you break down that and kind of how it relates to what we just talked about?
Yeah, that actually was, I've never been a lawbreaker. So that was something that I spent a lot of time researching on. And in the Go course, you guys have cases from the Oxford House. But you actually do not need any type of license to, you know, operate unlicensed group home. There's a law that in the Fair Housing Act that says, you know, the population that we serve is considered family, and, you know, they're able to live with each other. Just like if I had a family with a grandpa and an aunt and we were all living together, it's the same thing with what we're doing. And you don't need a license to do that. So you don't need a license to do this either.
Bingo. And we break all that down. Me and Terrence, we're not lawyers, but we have interviewed one. So if you guys scroll down, you can go listen to our interview with LaTanya, where we dive into this issue. But yeah, that's it. If you guys have questions on it, feel free to reach out. But most people do get hung up on that for a little bit, which is fine. But you know, short story, yeah, you're going to run into folks that they might need counseling or even casework, which probably most of your people are still working with caseworkers, right? You know, medication, yep. Like it doesn't necessarily even need to be like full on nursing care, but say, you know, someone does need a nurse, that's all going to be outsourced most of the time. And, you know, what we see, I'd like to hear how it happens for you, Terrence, is most of the time the stuff's set up already, like by the caseworkers that you're marketing to, right?
Absolutely. And that's like, I guess the best part of it is because most of the time the individuals don't reach out to us to find the housing. The nonprofits actually do. So like you said, everything's already set up for them. The case management, their doctors, their medications, the nurses, all the nonprofits need is a house, then a roof to put over their head, and that's where we come in.
Yep. You did mention one of the guys or gals does have home you know, working with home health, was that something that you needed to coordinate, or was that taken care of beforehand?
Their family actually took care of that for them.
Yeah. So that's what I was guessing. Maybe was that like, did they find you like online or through some other form of marketing, or maybe it was like a word of mouth referral?
Yeah, it was word of mouth referral. So on top of nonprofits, other agencies are starting to reach out to us that are specifically for like seniors. And so we're on some of those lists as well. There's a, in Tampa, there's like a Hillsboro Resource Center. We're on a list for them. So people can come just looking for housing for different scenarios. And we're on a lot of lists now to where we will be referred to those individuals.
Beautiful. That kind of leads into my next question for you. What's your marketing look like now? Are you guys still, you know, casting a wide net, doing automated stuff, or is it just kind of people are just calling you at this point?
Brandon, I have been doing a bad job at marketing now. It is all word of mouth. there's been a few times to where if we have vacancies, I'll send out a mass blast email to everyone in our email list. We use MailChimp. But what I want to do now, you know, as like the person working more on the business, as like our housing coordinator and my partner working more in it, is, you know, send out a constant message, you know, once a month with a newsletter update. You know, we sometimes do events with some of our residents. We'll go bowling, or last year we did a holiday party where we got all five locations together. So the nonprofit likes, they know we do good work, but they like seeing it too. So sharing more success stories of residents when they move out and they get their own place, or they have a better relationship with their family, stuff like that. So definitely want to do a better job on my part and, you know, staying in touch with the nonprofits and just our email list and doing more marketing. But as far as what the business needs now, we do not need to do any marketing. It's all word of mouth.
Nice. When you were starting out, like how big was your contact list and what were you doing to kind of get to that point?
Yeah, our first one, I think we got into the hundreds, if I'm not mistaken, when I first started working with you. I was Googling different nonprofits, different, I was researching doctors as well. And then you actually pointed me in the direction of Fiverr. So hired a virtual assistant to do market research. You know, someone overseas who was affordable actually put together a list of 300 nonprofits, case managers, social workers in the area. And then from there, I was able to use that list to send out emails to call and tell them about what we were doing. And that's how we really generated and took it off.
That was a nice business lesson for you on outsourcing, right?
Yep, it was.
Which we'll get into, right? But yeah, you know, starting out, that's kind of what we show folks. It's just, and you know, Terrence, you already run into the issue of like needing to get more real estate to meet the demand, right? But imagine if you had 1,000 or so contacts and you had a virtual assistant, you know, making consistent calls, you were doing consistent emails like once a week or every other week. All of those contacts got an email blast. You had Facebook advertising, texts going out, yep, flyers, advertising on roomies.com, Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace. It's, you know, you say you're doing a bad job marketing, but your phone's already ringing off the hook. So the sky's the limit with this stuff. So
yeah, and that's where we're going to grow to. All those things you just mentioned, where yeah, that is the next step in the journey.
And where people get hung up is like thinking that they're going to get all that done in like a day, and, you know, they get frustrated or thinking that they need to do all that stuff. No, that's stuff that like can slowly be chipped away at. And as your business grows, you know, it's about where Terrence is at now is about like working on that business. So all that stuff that I mentioned, along with even, you have a website, right?
Yep. kingdomhousing.org.
Cool. So you could be doing like Google ads and search engine optimization and, you know, putting out content through there. All this stuff that I mentioned, This is not stuff that Terrence is going to do personally every single day. He could, but he's not going to be living that, you know, the 4-hour work week that he's living now. Which, have you ever heard of that book by Tim Ferriss?
I actually have. When you said it, I thought of it. Yeah, I listened to the audio version.
I was going to say 5-hour work week, but
you know, it didn't fit.
Yeah, I was like, no, he's doing 4 hours. But yep. He got a lot of flack when he put that out, like people in the business community, which you can kind of understand, right? Like, imagine mm-hmm. if you grew a business where you worked like 80 hours every week, you've been grinding, you know, you did that for 5 years. And then you hear some guy like that say, you know, 4-hour work week, they got offended. But yep. You're seeing it come to fruition right now. So that's cool to see.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that a little bit. And me and you will kind of get into the details in a little bit off record. But what are some of the challenges that you're facing when it comes to, like, you know, systems and kind of scaling this thing out to full-blown organization like you have in mind?
Yeah. The admin side of things. We get a lot of phone calls every day from nonprofits, from individuals, from people wanting to just simply learn more about us. So having someone to assist with that, being consistent in marketing, sending out a monthly newsletter, putting posts on social media. We're not on any social media platforms yet. I actually had a resident. She ended up moving into one of our locations, but she was honest because, you know, we sat down with everyone and said she was a little hesitant moving in because she couldn't find us on social media. So since that conversation, I've been looking into, okay, we have to be present because in today's day, people do go to social media first. They are going to Google you to make sure that it's a legit place because there's a bunch of, unfortunately, a lot of scams everywhere too. So just doing better at marketing is the number one priority. And then number two is the real estate side of things. Like I mentioned, we're renting out all 5 of our locations right now. So the goal from here is to start purchasing them and move forward from there.
Beautiful. So I'm going to give kind of like, we'll drop a couple gems and then we'll get into kind of our coaching session after this. But
sounds good.
Just based on what you just said, like, you know, people calling and leaving messages and maybe you're tied up and it goes a couple of days before you follow up with them. Did you have stuff like that happen?
All the time.
Yeah. So, and there's two ways really to scale a business. It comes down to like systems and people. And we'll kind of show you how to do both of these. But one really simple solution to just that is a service called patlive.com. I'll show you how to find your own folks and train them. But PatLive, they have a team of virtual assistants. You kind of give them like just the basics on how to answer the call. And you have somebody there 24/7 with like their script. So no call goes unanswered. That's just one example of to solve like just one issue that just came up, right? Another is to kind of be just overall like the idea of outsourcing. You always, as a business owner, you always want to look to see how you could buy yourself more time. And one example that popped up, it's one of those, like the very first things that you're going to do in this business, like the first actionable steps after you, you know, stop getting out of the learning phase. We've talked about, you know, marketing, you reach out to these nonprofits. So the actual first step is to get a list of these places, which we were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And you remember how time consuming that was. You know, did you regret your decision to outsource that task to the guy on Fiverr?
Not at all. Which worth every dollar.
Exactly. So you could do that for every step of the business. So we'll go over like what your goals are and I'll kind of show you how to build an organizational chart. Do you have an organizational chart now?
I do not.
So you could do it for now, but that wouldn't be very productive. So what I have people do is you build the organizational chart, not for what your business is now, but what it looks like in a year or two, like say with 15 properties, mm-hmm. you build out the organizational chart. You start to think of like the day-to-day activities, then you go find the people to put in place. So right now it might be a caller, or for you, it might just be a general like virtual assistant, someone that can work a couple hours per day and you kind of grow them with the business. Maybe, you know, doing your social media posts, answering emails, forwarding leads off to you or your business partner or whoever that role is. So those are like the general concepts, but that's it. Where as far as like the staffing and the systems and stuff, those are like the some good general ideas for not just you, but the folks listening as well. And then as far as like real estate is concerned, have you like sat down with a bank and like seen what you're approved for?
Not yet. So that we just, well, not just, we're a couple months out now, but this was our second year in business. So we were able to file our second year tax returns. So when I reached out the first year, that is what the banks told me that they prefer to see, you know, a business who's been operating for 2 years. So now we have that. So now we're ready to go sit down and see what we're approved for.
Beautiful. So you're doing it, getting the first home in the business's name.
We're going to get the first home however we can. I'd love to do it in the business name, but if I have to do it in my personal name, I'm open to doing that as well.
Yeah, for that, it's a simpler process, but you're just going to take, they're going to look at your personal income, your credit, and your equity. And by equity, that means, you know, how much you can put down as a down payment. So it's typically, you know, 10 or 20%.
Yep.
Then from there, you just work with a real estate agent. After you guys go through like the traditional route, you're usually going to be capped at like two or three properties. Then from there, it's about, you know, learning these off-market strategies, which we'll touch on after this because it's people out there listening to the audio stuff. It's not going to mean much, but you could do the type of stuff that we were talking about earlier as far as like wholesaling goes. I recommend now and just everybody out there, it's not going to hurt. No matter what stage you're in, go to like local meetups, check meetup.com is what I used to use a lot, and look up, you know, real estate events in your area. You'll find investors, you'll find off-market lenders, you'll find landlords, right, that are looking for people that want to make more money and probably get less phone calls on their properties. So that's a great place to find landlords, even maintenance guys, construction crews, and other wholesalers. You know, that's a great way to get started at looking at off-market properties. Just kind of look at the deals that are off-market, learn how to analyze them and stuff like that. So that's a lot. That's a lot of general information for the folks out there. But if you're interested in, you know, starting a business like Terrence, start learning how to walk before you can run, bare minimum, you know, get the gold course and start with that stuff and reach out to us with questions as you go along. So Terrence, man, great story. It was awesome catching up with you and kind of hearing what you've been doing. I loved it, man. I could always tell in the beginning, you had really great energy. You were in it for the right reasons. So I love seeing success stories like this. And again, that's why we do it. You know, the feeling you get, speaking with your tenants, that's how me and Andy feel when see people like you just blow it out of the water. So thank you.
No problem. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you have any parting words for the folks out there?
I do, actually. You made me think about something while you were telling that last bit. And for everyone listening, if you're skeptical or you haven't already, definitely go join the Group Home Riches Facebook group. Buy the gold course. It's extremely affordable for the amount of value that they get out of it. The agreements that are in there, I still use to this day. So definitely go make that small investment. And one of the things I wanted to share that I regret doing at the beginning, and I don't know why I did it, probably with my personality, is I kind of kept doing this to myself. I wasn't sharing it with other people. And, you know, after I started sharing it with people, you know, at my church, around, you know, people I would just see at the gym or stuff like that, I was shocked to see that people were actually excited and people wanted to donate items. So this last house that we got, a member from our church actually donated majority of the furniture there because she was moving out of her house. So if you're serious about getting started, definitely don't be afraid to share what your vision is with people. because, you know, God will put the right people in place to help you along your journey.
I love it. And you've kind of, you plugged it earlier. Where can people reach out to you, Terrence, if they have questions on you or your business?
Yeah. So our website is kingdomhousing.org. And then our business phone number is 813-649-3362. And you could text me on there, call me. Like I said earlier, we get a lot of calls. So if I don't answer, get back to you right away, don't be offended. But happy to chat with anyone and share some more details about what we're doing and hear what your visions are to get started or how you want to continue to grow. And heck, maybe we could partner together one day.
Love it. And folks, to kind of be respectful of Terrence's time, bare minimum, if you are just starting out, check out grouphomeriches.com, sign up for the free training material. You'll get a 5-part course emailed to you over a couple of days that are just going to break down the basics. Okay. So the typical questions that almost everybody has, it's all going to be answered in that free material. Then from there, this sounds like a business you want to go with, bare minimum, sign up for the gold course. At the time of recording, it's only $199. You get access to the gold course group, over 2,000 members, all different stages of their careers. You got people like Terrence in there, and most of the podcast guests are in there. They're active, ready to help you through any issues you have, answer any questions. So, and yeah, we're very accessible as well. You have any questions, you can always email me or Andy. So, man, excellent catching up with you, Terrence. Thank you so much for joining us. Stick around. We'll kind of get into the nitty gritty on kind of what we talked about as far as, you know, staffing and real estate stuff. And folks listening out there, we love hearing stories like this. So reach out if, you know, you have a success story like this, or if you want to be one of these, we'd love to see it. Thank you so much, Terrence.
Awesome. Thanks, Brandon.